Professor Peter Lynham.
And how are you today?
I'm not bad, mate, but I'm afraid that the topic that we're going to talk about, people are going to get real mad at us for doing it.
Yep, that's right, that's right. We'll be fun getting them real mad at me. So, I am not interested in the royal funeral for the sake of the usual royal gossip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just intrigued about the whole notion of religion sort of serving the interests of the state as it did on Saturday night.
Right.
And so that's what I want to focus on.
Was the funeral on a Saturday night? That's cool.
Yeah, well, the actual real thing was, well, early Sunday morning, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and much reshown, I'm sure, after that. I did not get up to watch it, needless to say. But I still thought it was a really interesting case where religion serves a very important state function. And it just reminded me of the ways in which a state church keeps England, well, it keeps it a very traditional, and it kind of, it's and the throne, it's and royalty seem to be natural neighbours, state church and monarchy.
They're right up in there when someone gets married as well, I'm sure. I feel like...
Yes, of course.
We were kind of... Yeah. This is going to sound grim, but I feel like we're due a bit of a funeral. It's been weddings, feels like, recently.
Yes, and weddings see one side of it, and all the pomp and ceremony for that. This was a very pared-back funeral, of course, because only 30 guests, etc.
Wow.
And the focus was primarily on the military.
Was that because of COVID, sorry? The 30 people?
Yes, it was. Yes, they were only allowed 30 guests.
Did that make it cheaper for everyone else that isn't a royal?
Well, I would say it was less disruptive, that's for sure, because everybody stayed off the streets and was presumably at home watching on TV if they were interested.
Hmm.
If they weren't interested, and you could see some out on the streets of Windsor going about their ordinary business, going to the shops.
Now, Peter, just quickly going back to, you said the focus was on the military. I didn't see any of it, and I'm not sure exactly what happened. But
okay.
When you say the military, what was going on there?
How many bullets? How many guns salute was it?
Yes, so it was a 99-gun salute. Mm. But above all, I mean, there was about a couple of hours, I think, before the service. I mean, I jumped forward and then because I couldn't bear it.
Sorry, so when you say a 99-gun salute, that means they shot 99 times?
Yeah.
How many guns shot 99 times? Just one?
I think there were three guns employed, but okay. I lost interest in that.
I'm just trying to break this down real quick. Sorry, if you just indulge me for a second. There's three guns doing 99 shots. Do they have to reload each one, or are they...
Yes, they had to reload between each.
So we're talking
about a half minute between each shot.
Oh, there you go. So we're talking almost 5 minutes of someone standing there shooting rifle into there.
Oh, yes.
Fucking hell, that's too much right there.
Yeah, okay.
And
then it's followed by, this is prior to the actual funeral itself, all within the grounds of Windsor Castle, they have representatives of all the various forces that Prince Philip had been commander-in-chief for.
Oh, I see.
And you see, I mean, I think the parade of the military showed was that to him, the military aspect of his career that was cut short when his wife became queen was still pretty important to him.
Yeah, certainly.
So, I mean, this is where military pomp connects itself in and it creates ceremony. Though they couldn't have grand ceremony at the funeral, the really pared back funeral, but outside in the open air, they could have quite a lot of troops marching around and doing the usual British thing.
Now, outside of just the ceremony, what part sort of does the church have a hand in?
So the church only has a hand in when they go into the church and a ceremony in the church.
Mm.
Okay. And even there, it was evidently closely controlled by Prince Philip and knew exactly what he wanted. So there was no sermon.
From beyond the grave.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, well, when you're 99 years old, I guess you get to dictate exactly what you want.
Mm. Was he open casket? Could you see him?
Of course there's no open casket. Okay. This is British pomp and ceremony.
I don't know what's going
restraint.
On. Okay, sorry.
No. And besides, they've got to put those flags somewhere. So the flags drape across the casket, and they represent his rank and status. And see, what is therefore very striking about the service is you're firstly in the Royal Chapel of St George's Windsor Castle, which is an extraordinarily grand setting, magnificent, built by Henry VIII. And
it's interesting you say that. Somebody says surely Anglican. Yeah, was set up specifically for the English crown so Henry VIII could divorce and marry at will.
Well, the alteration, the breaking away from the Catholic, the control of the Pope was done precisely for that. But there's a fair bit of tradition that's developed in the church, a little bit more to it than that. You can see that in the way Philip controlled it. Mm. It's also interesting. See, Philip's background was from a Greek Orthodox background, and he converted to Anglicanism in order to marry the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little bit of a Greek Orthodox liturgy sung by this tiny choir of four voices standing just out in the main nave of the church and resounding through. And that's all they could afford to keep their numbers down.
Right.
But then they roll in. The Dean of Windsor is the person in charge of St. George's Chapel. But the Archbishop of Canterbury is the head of the Anglican Church worldwide. So there's only two clergy there, whereas there'd normally be a whole strand of them. But they're the two. They're two big names.
Is a funeral like this a good vehicle for attracting new members to the Anglican Church?
God, no, John, that is how vulgar, actually.
It's a disaster because it represents Anglicanism in league with the Crown, exactly expressing the formality, the restraint, not a word out of place, not a word undiluted, formal. No expression of emotion whatsoever.
Oh, that sounds sad, actually, doesn't it?
Of course, people love.
Hmm.
Sorry, what was your comment?
It just sounds a bit sad. You just said no emotion was expressed at all.
Ah, no emotion is expressed. It doesn't mean that there's no emotion is felt.
But that's what makes it sad to me.
Yes, of course. but then you don't. That means that you don't get some of the weirder aspects of the tradition of monarchy,
right?
Because the tradition of monarchy is increasingly that it's just a role that it plays.
Yeah, and they are in fact kind of playing out what they believe to be their heritage in a sense in front of everyone.
They actually believe in this formal role, the scripted role,
the majesty,
and in which they express grandeur and restraint and self-control, and it's perfectly expressed in that service, in which you have to, you know, sort of overread the lack of expression of the Queen's head down and no focus. The BBC is not allowed to focus on any particular face, so you can't see whether they're crying or not. And anyway, the service floor sheets are so big that they can use it to cover their faces anyway. So that it becomes in a stark way, an expression of religion in league with tradition that makes a certain kind of definition of what is power, I guess, certainly authority.
But look, the real question, Peter, what was the Queen wearing?
Black.
Okay.
What was everybody wearing?
Really? Was that the rules? Can't wear anything a little bit?
Of course, yeah.
Righto. And do you think...
armbands, etc.
I felt, and this might just be my own sort of bubble that I'm in, but it felt like a lot of people were kind of pretty stoked to see the back end of Prince Philip.
I have no idea. I mean, this isn't the point where we're just speculating on people's attitude.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Isn't that kind of interesting thing to sort of note, isn't it?
Well, the way monarchy survives today is on the Daily Express and its and the Daily Mail, and their speculations about what's going on in the family. Harry and Meghan going before Oprah is utterly inconsistent with this kind of notion of monarchy, which struggles to hold a line between formal appearance and
fame,
the soap opera.
Well, I guess the stiff formal appearance just lends itself to the crazy rumor mill and people gossiping, because people just would, you know, they're bored it's like boring as batshit watching the formality of the ceremony. Why not gossip about what's going on behind closed doors?
Well, but have you ever thought it could be the other way around? That the sheer formality of it is, if you like, a brilliant stroke, because, I mean, we're overwhelmed with all the blabbing about what's going on in our private lives from the rich and famous in the US, for example. And in this context, the space is there, and we've got to fill in the gaps, and we've got no real ability to know until years and years later how much truth there was in the story. So, I mean, I think, and the intriguing aspect is that Prince Philip, in his own way, masterminded that approach. He was extremely good with Pierre at coercing the Queen and the monarchy to provide a certain amount of entertainment without giving anything away about what's really going on.
Right.
And so the funeral exactly expressed this, that he would have been very content that the circumstances of COVID meant that there couldn't be any room for anything to go wrong.
Yeah, I was thinking
because
that
the players were so few.
Yeah.
Everything could be kept exactly scripted.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that. Was there anybody, any sort of stars there at all? Was Beckham there or anything? Or was it just...
No, I mean, they had to talk nonsense about did Harry and William walk alongside each other and ignore the fact that Peter Philip walked between them. But that was scripted anyway. They didn't have any choice in that.
Interesting.
Because they were the grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And so the grandchildren walk with the boys in the front and the girls behind. You know, that's the way it goes.
Mm. Right on.
And so, I mean, of course, what it leaves is the interesting question that you have to, in effect, believe in this formality in order to do the playing out of the roles. And perhaps this is the last generation that will do this.
Yeah, we'll see.
It is an interesting thought. And whether, in fact, the church wants to produce these goods, to keep producing these goods, well, I suppose they do, because it's grand titles like Archbishop of Canterbury, that's what they're there for.
They might as well stick together with this other thing that is sort of kind of going off trend, you know what I mean? They might as well...
Yes. But meanwhile, of course, underneath the grand titled ones, I mean, the ordinary stuff of religion is its, you know, chaotic self, with Anglicanism in a massive decline in Britain. But there's always enough people to hold the big title.
It is always interesting deciphering these things with you, Peter. Thank you for humouring me and John, and we will catch you next Monday.
Well, just let me know if the insults are too great.
We're all good. Another dead colonial beep beep meh. That was the last text that we got. So
yes, I could imagine.
Thanks, mate.